Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's everybody doing? It's Monday morning. That means the Monday morning movie reviews are about to commence. And my dad's going to tell a joke because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey time. We're also going to talk about, discuss the first time that you ever felt old. And we'll share some stories from people who suddenly felt old. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because last night I watched the Billboard Music Awards. And we'll go through the winners of that. I'll give you the list of winners of that. And it just made me feel really old watching it. So we'll get back to that. That's coming up right here on 720 WGN. And yeah. All right. So it is Monday. And that means we talked with Eric Childress and Colin Suter, who join me every Monday morning to review the new movies. And then Eric sticks around and we talk about box office. Just a few movies to talk about this week. Eric, welcome.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Well, let's we don't have a lot here now. I did not see nobody saw Book Club, which is the Diane Keaton, who else is in it? Candace Bergen, Jane Fonda, and Mary Steenburgen movie.
About, yeah, we're all cowards.
About the ladies who have a book club. They read 50 Shades of Grey and wackiness ensues. Now, we didn't see it, but I do have to say, I mean, it looks terrible. But I do have to say, the cast is unbelievable. Like, I mean, it's a great cast. Not just the ladies, but, you know, the guys in the movie. I mean, they really, you know, they really got a good cast for this thing.
Yeah, which probably makes it all the more painful from what I understand.
That's probably true, yeah. Yeah. All right, well, you guys did not see The Seagull.
No.
So let me start with that real quick. The Seagull, this is based on the Anton Chekhov play, which is actually one of my favorite of Chekhov's plays. It's a romantic sort of comedy, like some of his stuff is. And it takes place in a sea village, and it's a romantic triangle, and it's a woman, and she visits the estate of her elderly brother, and then romance ensues with three or four different people, and it's in Chekhov fashion. It's kind of slow moving. It's often kind of funny. And the cast here is amazing, and I'm recommending. I think it's a good adaptation of The Seagull. It's beautifully shot. It looks beautiful. The locations are wonderful, and the acting is really great. You know, when you have like Annette Bening, Saoirse Ronan, Elizabeth Moss, you know, in the same movie, that's like a dream come true for me. And to watch them work with Chekhov's material is really, really fun. Brian Dennehy shows up in it. Corey Stoll is in it. It's got a great cast. Mayor Winningham shows up in it as well. And this is, if you know the material, you know that this is really well cast. Elizabeth Moss, Saoirse Ronan, and Annette Bening are the three main female leads, and they're all great, which goes without saying because all three of these actresses are three of my favorite actresses ever. And to watch them take on the Chekhov stuff is really fun, and everybody seems to be having a really good time. So I really liked it. If you're a fan of Chekhov, if you're a fan of this play, this is a really nice adaptation of it. So I recommend The Seagull. So, all right, Colin, why don't you tell us about Pope Francis, A Man of His Word?
Yeah, this is a documentary from Wim Wenders, and it is about Pope Francis, and the movie follows him all over the world as he delivers messages of hope and grace and charity throughout the world. And unlike previous popes, he's a humble guy who lives as he preaches. He doesn't really need anything lavish surrounding him. He lives in a little condo. He gets driven around in an economy car when he's in town. So he doesn't believe he should be afforded luxuries when others are starving. So he's an unusual figure for this in that, for that reason. And, you know, the fact that he was found in South America and he speaks out about the dangers of global warming and the environment. So, as we all know, he's kind of the first of his kind. And then Wenders gets a lot of on-camera interview time with him, and Pope Francis pretty much dominates the film and the narration of it. thankfully, because Wim Wenders, while being, you know, a great filmmaker and a poet of the cinema, he's not the most engaging narrator for movies. A little dry. And then definitely there are moments where he reminds us that in this film. So, I mean, it's pretty much like that Malala documentary we had a couple of years ago. It's very much, you know, Wenders clearly has a love for this person, and, you know, does not take any sort of critical jab at him at all. But what and not that he has to, but, you know, for what he is, because, you know, I don't know about you, but I like this Pope a lot. but the thing is about this movie is that it's so sort of reveres him in such a way that it kind of narrows the focus a bit. And this is a controversial Pope that we've had. And I kind of want to know more about that. I kind of want to know more about, you know, the sort of when he first came out of the scene and, you know, when he first started speaking out about certain things that popes usually didn't speak out about and had certain views that other popes didn't have. You know, a lot of people, you know, were kind of taken aback. And I kind of want to know more about that part of the story and about that part of his life. And I want to know more about, like, what is he up against as he travels around and you know, is kind of the Pope for the 21st century. You know, just kind of the obstacles and things he has to, you know, deal with on the world stage. You know, a lot of people revere him, but a lot of people don't. So I kind of want to know more about the other side, really, the people who don't. And Wenders just kind of just glosses over that. So the movie is just kind of lacks conflict in that way, which is unfortunate. But I mean, if as a critic, I got to say, it kind of missed the mark a little bit, but it's not a bad film. But if you really want to know more about this Pope and what he has to say and everything, and aren't concerned about too much about story, then you'll probably like this movie a lot. But if you're, you know, looking for a little bit more substance, you know, behind all this, the substance that's really there, you might come out disappointed. So I was a little disappointed in this film.
Okay. I have to say, I haven't seen it. I have to say that, I'm amazed at the amount of theaters that this thing is in. Doesn't it seem unusual that it's, I mean, it's like, it's pretty widespread.
I mean, you know, it seems like at least once a month we have a new faith-based movie that, you know, does really well. So I think maybe the idea here is, well, this is a faith-based documentary about, you know, a very high-profile faith-based figure. So I think maybe there's a logic to that maybe this will be a bigger movie than your average documentary.
Yeah.
But I haven't looked at the numbers either, but I'm assuming you guys will talk about that in the box office. So I'm not sure how it did.
How did it do, Eric?
Not particularly well.
No.
I mean, for the number of theaters, it's, I think it's in like some like 360 theaters or something like that. It made like 460,000 total. Mm-hmm. So like the per screen average is very low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised to see, you know, that it's playing in multiplexes. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I have no idea why. I find it kind of unusual. I think it's cool. You know, I wish more documentaries like this would get a wider release. More people would be able to see them. And I realized that
Colin really hit on something there. I think that the idea of the faith-based movies. I mean, we're coming off, you know, that I Can Only Imagine film, which, you know, was, you know, huge. And did Magnolia release? Is this a Magnolia release or another studio?
Focus.
Focus. Okay. Yeah. Because, you know, there's a documentary in the top 10 again this week.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't know if Focus maybe looked at that and went like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And that documentary, which is RBG,
mm-hmm.
Also is the profile of someone who's, you know, widely liked and fascinating.
Right.
So, you know, I guess that makes sense. But people are really going to see that one, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't believe it. Second week in a row that a documentary about Ruth Bader Ginsburg is in the top 10.
Top 10.
Yeah.
That's amazing. All right, well, we'll get to the box office a little bit later on. But so you were a little disappointed with Pope Francis, a man of his word, but not a terrible movie at all.
No, not terrible.
Okay, great. All right, Eric, tell us about Dark Crimes.
Okay, well, this is based on a true crime article back from 2008 about a Polish policeman who, the lengths that he went through, the sort of the fascinating lengths he went through to solve this murder that happened. This movie takes, obviously, many liberties with that story, and it stars Jim Carrey as that Polish policeman, emphasis on the word Polish, because this movie is filled with Polish accents up and down and left and right. The movie is obviously set in Poland. Businessman has been murdered. There are some connections with, like, potentially like a kinky underground dungeon sex club, and also some higher ups in the Polish government. And it leads them particularly to one suspect played by Martin Zakas, who has written a book that suspiciously contains many elements of the crime that has been committed in a very kind of basic instinct kind of way. So there's a lot of scenes of Carrey believes he has zeroed in on his man. There's a lot of scenes of him in the interrogation room trying to get the confession out of him, and then him, the suspect, going to the press and saying that he was abused by the cops. And this little dance that the two of them continue to do. Charlotte Gainsbourg plays the wife of the suspect, and Carrie begins kind of taking a little bit of a interest in her, and some of his sort of peculiar kinks begin coming out as well, even though that he is he's married and has a child himself.
Okay, hang on a second, Eric.
All right.
We're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and then Eric will finish his review of Dark Crimes, and I'll tell you what I thought of it as well. It's Jim Carrey's new thriller, Dark Crimes. But we got to take a break here. We got the news coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It's Monday morning. And that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We are going to talk about times when you felt old, maybe the first time you ever felt old. And we've got a whole bunch of stories relating to that. And the reason why I bring this up is because I watched the Billboard Music Awards from last night, and I felt like I was 300 years old. And we'll go down the list of winners for that award show as well. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. We are in the middle of the Monday morning movie reviews with Eric Childress and Colin Suter. Well, let's get back to that. Before the news, before the break, Eric was telling us about the plot to a new Jim Carrey thriller called Dark Crimes. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, continue with telling us about Dark Crimes.
Okay, well, Dark Crimes, this is basically a movie for people who found last year's The Snowman too fast-paced and interesting. this is just a relentlessly just dour, dank exercise in nothing, really. I mean, it is just an incredible slog to sit through. The kind of movie you're sitting and going, like, why this movie? I've seen elements of this movie in, all up and down. I've seen elements of this movie before that has no spin on any of the material. The performances are completely one note. There's no suspense. There's no sort of damning twists or turns to this thing. It's just so. I mean, it's not even boilerplate. It's less than that. Poor Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey has proven himself to be, a fine actor beyond, the comedies that he's been known for. But even those dramatic roles that he's taken on have always had kind of an element of quirk or whimsy to them. You think Truman Show, Man on the Moon, Eternal Sunshine, even something as ridiculous as the number 23 you know, at least, you know, the material is just so kind of odd, you know, just kind of going, what the hell is going on here, that there's at least something, you know, kind of a likable presence with Carrie there to sort of kind of get you through some of it. This one, it is so humorless. There's not even a trace of anything that that makes Carrie likable through all his other work, that you sit there and it makes the whole exercise like you want to laugh at him. There's a scene in the movie where he just comes upon a dead body and he starts a crying fit. And all I could think of was Ace Ventura when he discovers the identity of Ray Finkel. there's moments like that throughout this movie where it's just, you know, with him and his Polish accent, you think he's doing something from Unliving Color at times. But it's not. There's just nothing in this movie worth grabbing onto. And, you know, after 90 minutes, I was just like, all right, that's... And it ends on a note and just like, so you're not even going to have an epilogue. You're not even going to, you know... apparently not even going to follow what really happened in real life. It's pretty amazing. It is absolutely one of the worst things I've seen so far this year.
Yeah, it's bad, man. And you're so right about it being tough to sit through, but it's just and so dark and dour and like you said, and you know, it just seems to me that Jim Carrey is, and you know, and as you said before, he's capable of doing, you know, straight drama.
Mm-hmm.
He's a talented guy, but this seems like he is so determined to be dark and serious. You know what I mean? It just has this. The whole movie feels that way. It's like, hey, here's, you know, welcome to the dark side, and there's not going to be any kind of let up at all. And even though it's not particularly thrilling or scary or anything like that, it's not even particularly. I mean, there's kinky stuff in it, but even that doesn't feel. It all feels forced. It all feels like we are trying really, really hard to make, like, you know, a thriller like Seven or something, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like desperately trying to pile on the darkness. And I mean, you know, even the original title of the movie was True Crimes. They changed it to Dark because I think that has everything to do with why this movie exists.
Yeah.
And you know, I like you, I felt bad for Jim Carrey, but it, you know, it seems to me that he was going way out of his way to be as serious and dark and humorless as possible to try and maybe prove that he can do it, even though I think we all know that he can.
Yeah.
You know, and the rest of the cast, I mean, I love Charlotte Gainsbourg. I think she's terrific, and, you know, and I've always liked her, and I think she does really daring work, and nothing really happens here. Right from the beginning, like the opening shots, like, you know, like the sex dungeon thing, that's how the movie opens.
Yeah, the sex club, did, you know, a movie produced by Brett Ratner, by the way.
Yeah, I know, exactly, and I saw, yeah. But it just seemed like right at the beginning, I was like, oh boy. You know what I mean? Like, as soon as it started, I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
But not in that, and it didn't offend me or anything. I was just like, oh, this is just going to be, you know.
No, but you would think that at least, you know, a movie that sets up that, you know, with an opening like that, that we're going to get into, you know, dark territory like that. But that stuff is so, I mean, it's almost just left behind.
Yeah.
After the opening scene. Just like, so why did we start there?
Yeah. No, it's a movie's an absolute mess. It's a complete mess. And, you know, I just kind of, because I watched it on the VOD, and I just was, I stopped it one time and took a break, and then came back and watched it. I mean, I did end up finishing it, but it's not good, man. And, you know, and I always root for Jim Carrey because I like the guy. But this is just, and it's, you know, and he's not good in it. I mean, it's, you know, the accent is shaky. And it just, everything about it seems really, really forced. Like, this is a dark thriller. We are going to take you to the underbelly, and we're not going to let you out, and it's going to be photographed darkly, and nobody's going to smile, and everything is, I mean, it just was, you know, it was depressing.
Yeah, I don't think anyone does smile in the movie.
No, I don't think there's...
I think you're absolutely right about that.
Nobody. I know Jim Carrey doesn't, for sure. I mean, Jim Carrey, it's just so stone-faced, and he's got a scowl on his face the entire movie. Yeah, no, not good.
No.
Not good.
Even the way he eats breakfast, they, like, make a point, like, see, he's weird.
Yeah, I know.
Like, he doesn't like food touching.
Right. Yeah, that's right at the beginning of the movie, too. So, I don't know. Anyway, it was bad. So.
Yeah.
All right, so stay away from dark crimes. So hopefully Jim Carrey can do something better out of the gate.
I hope so.
All right. Okay, Colin, why don't you tell us about Deadpool 2?
All right. Well, this is... the big sequel to the big hit from a couple years ago, The Foul-Mouthed rated R Marvel film that stars Ryan Reynolds as the masked Deadpool character and lives with his girlfriend. But I won't talk too much about that. I'll skip ahead to the bigger plot here, which has to do with a teenage boy who has supernatural abilities, destructive supernatural abilities, and how he needs protection from the big bad guy here, which is played by Josh Brolin. Deadpool tries to put together a team of superheroes to help him, and it's like an acting audition. He's kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel for superheroes. You know, they're very rogue and pretty silly, but the lone exception to the silliness being Jazzy Beetz as Domino, whose big superpower is being lucky. But that's not the important thing here. It's, you know, is Deadpool really the best guy to protect a youngster from the forces of evil? Is really the deal. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to reveal and what I'm not supposed to reveal, so I'm kind of being vague in my plot description. You know, I'm not sure what's considered a major surprise and what I'm supposed to leave out. So that's my plot description. This one's directed by David Leitch, who made Atomic Blonde last year. But, I mean, it doesn't feel like there's a new director here. It still feels kind of like the first Deadpool, which I thought was a film that, you know, I didn't see it until it came out on DVD, actually. But I thought it was charming enough for the first hour, and then it just kind of became your standard rote Marvel film in the second hour. And I thought this movie felt more consistent in tone. It doesn't always land. I mean, I think some of the jokes are, you know, some of the breaking the fourth wall is kind of lands with a thud a little bit, but then there's moments where I laughed out loud. I think, and you know, I think this movie has probably the funniest parachute scene since Fandango. I mean, really, just I laughed so hard at that scene, and I like the superhero crew that he brings together. I think there's a lot of mileage and a lot of laughs that come out of that. But it's just when the movie tries to like switch gears and say, okay, now we're in serious mode. Now we're supposed to take this character and this story seriously. You know, even when it doesn't do it, you know, with a wink, it just doesn't work. Because it's like you can't have it both ways here. You know, this is a very snarky, self-aware, self-parody, very much tongue-in-cheek film that really just still can't figure out how to be serious at the same time without really fumbling. So in that respect, I think the movie just doesn't work. But in terms of pure just laughs, and I got to say, I think I laughed enough during this movie to give it just enough of a recommendation, especially when we're, you know, often being inundated with very serious Marvel films that we're supposed to be very serious about because it's part of a lore and it's a big deal when this character comes in and blah, blah, blah. It's kind of nice to just sort of take a vacation from that and just have some laughs. And I think this movie has just enough laughs that I can recommend it.
Okay. You guys hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to take a break. And Colin gave it a pretty good review for Deadpool 2. We'll get Eric's thoughts and my thoughts on Deadpool 2 right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And it's Monday morning. That means Monday morning movie reviews. And it also means my dad's going to tell a joke. Eric Childress, Colin Suter are here. And before the break, Colin told us about Deadpool 2. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, you gave it an okay review. It's got enough laughs that you recommended it.
Yeah, and I should mention that, you know, Ryan Reynolds is not the only funny person here. Julian Dennison as the kid, I think, is great. He's the kid from Hunt for the Wilder People, who, by the way, has the best IMDb picture ever. Just look that up when you get a chance.
All right.
Yeah, and I think the what's her name, Beetz, I think she's pretty terrific too. So
okay,
I should mention that.
All right, and all right. Well, Eric, where are you on this one?
I am higher than Colin on it, actually. I was a fan of the first Deadpool movie. I thought it was kind of a refreshing change of pace, like Colin mentioned, of the superhero genre, and I was really on board with the snark of the first movie. In fact, that was the reason I liked it. And this one with David Leitch on board, I actually do think that there is a noticeable difference between the direction, because particularly in the action sequences, which is what David Leitch specializes in. Not only did he direct Atomic Blonde last year, which I thought had great action sequences and not much else, but also, you know, was kind of a uncredited director of the first John Wick film as well. So, you know, this guy clearly knows how to put together action sequences. And having seen the movie, I saw the movie twice, actually, this weekend, and once Thursday night and once with friends over the weekend. And I liked it even more the second time. I think the action sequences in this movie are really nicely done, really over the top, really ridiculous, but really nicely choreographed. I laughed a lot during this film. Parachuting scene notwithstanding, which is absolutely hilarious. You know, there are a couple moments where the joke here, our fourth wall, goes flat. I admit that, but I still laughed quite a bit throughout the film. I do think Gillian Denison is really good as the boy in the film. I like Josh Brolin as Cable, particularly in the back half of the movie. Obviously, Zazie Beetz goes without saying, although people need to know who she is. She's from Donald Glover's show Atlanta, which people need to watch.
Yes.
And if this movie draws them to that, well, that's another notch in its belt.
Yeah.
So it's really great casting. I get Colin's argument. I get the argument that to have such a foul-mouthed, snarky character that then has to sort of grow into, you know, more of an adult or more of a caring superhero. Wants to have it both ways. I kind of get that, but I think that the stuff that is set up with the relationship with his girlfriend Miranda Baccarin, I think that kind of translates a little bit more, because I think that there are some the scenes between them throughout the movie, in between the action, I think are kind of nicely handled. I like this movie quite a bit. I like it more than the first movie. I think it expands, it improves on the action. Some of the humor is great. There's some terrific cameos in the film, particularly one character called the Vanisher. If you didn't see who that character was.
Yeah.
It's pretty terrific. And it's, you blink and you miss it, though. I'm completely on board with this. And as of like all the big movies, we're only 3 weeks into this, or 4 weeks into the summer now, I guess. Tully notwithstanding, this is probably my favorite big movie of the summer so far.
Yeah, I'm not down with this, man. I am just not down with the Deadpool thing. I
knew this, though.
I just don't like the character. You know what is it? The problem with the Deadpool movies is Deadpool. I just don't like the character. I don't like the snark. The fourth wall stuff makes me nuts. And I didn't laugh a lot during this movie at all. I think I laughed like three times. The parachute thing is funny. And by the way, can I just say, people, if you avoid the IMDb page for this movie, because everybody's listed on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Don't, because it's part of some of the fun moments in the movie are the cameos, that show up in the movie. But don't go to the IMDb page, because I'm looking at it right now, and the fifth, one, two, three, four, the fifth character on the list is Vanisher. And they tell you who it is. And they tell you who Zeitgeist was. They tell, these people showing up that you don't know.
Right.
We're in the movie, and that's part of, the fun. So stay away from, any of the possible spoilers. I'm not recommending the movie because I didn't like it. but for people who want to see it, don't part of the fun of this is these surprise cameos that show up. So don't check out that page. The character makes me nuts, and Colin, I'm with you 100% because you kind of can't have it both ways. Anytime this movie tries to get serious about the relationship between him and his girlfriend, or when it starts to get serious about the relationship between him and the kid, it doesn't work. I thought Brolin was boring until that switch at the end, Eric, that you're talking about. Because
mm-hmm.
he's really funny in the second part of the movie, because they kind of have to team up. And that stuff was really, because Brolin is very funny in the latter part of the movie. But the action sequences are good. There's no question about it. This guy knows how to cut and direct action. There's no question about it. The strongest stuff in this movie are the action scenes. But anytime Deadpool is making his smart-ass comments and remarks, it just, to me, it's dead air. I don't like the character. I don't think it's funny. The fourth wall stuff makes me crazy. Zazie Beetz. Good Lord, do I love her. And she's fantastic on Atlanta. For those people who don't know, she's great on that, and she all but steals this movie. I think the movie, and I want a Domino standalone movie now. All right, well, there you go. Colin was, he liked it. Eric really liked it, and I did not. So
there you go.
But you guys knew I wasn't. I mean, I'm just, it's not my thing.
Yeah.
I just, it's, so anyway. All right, next week we're off. It's Memorial Day, but Solo. A Star Wars story is coming out, and First Reformed, the new Paul Schrader film. So it's a good week. It's going to be a big week.
Yeah.
But we're going to be off for Memorial Day. All right, Colin, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Okay, buddy?
Sounds good.
All right, see you later. There's Colin. Eric, you hang on.
Uh-huh.
All right, we're going to break. When we come back, after the news, Eric and I are going to talk about the box office and tell you how much money all the movies have made over the weekend. And that's coming up right after we break from the news here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. And yeah, Monday morning means the Monday morning movie reviews. We just did that. And that also means Eric Childress sticks around and we talk about the box office for the week. And we do this every Monday morning. And it is Monday. And it's Nick DiGilio. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke, a jokey time. We'll tell you all about the Billboard Music Awards. If you watched them, we would love to hear from you. And that means that we are also going to talk about the first time or how many times you felt old. We'll get to that as well. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And let's get Eric Childress back in here to talk about the box office. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, man. Deadpool, obviously, Deadpool number one with $125 million. And some people are saying that that's kind of a disappointment.
I think it is, too. I mean, I was actually genuinely shocked to see that the sequel came up with a number that was less than the first movie. I mean, the first movie was, this out of nowhere hit. It came out in over Valentine's Day weekend in 2016.
Yeah.
And you would think, given now a summer slot, everyone's gonna be jonesing for this thing. It's had time to now build a greater audience. I mean, the general tracking had it at $150 million.
Wow.
This weekend, and usually that's usually low. So I thought it was going to do even more than that. I think I said as much last week.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was, when I saw even the initial numbers were saying like 130, 132, I was just like, man, that seems low. That's got to go up.
Well, what did the first one?
It went down a little.
What did the first one make?
$132 million
on its opening weekend.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, in February it was the biggest. Still now, obviously, the biggest R-rated opening of all time. And I honestly, I mean, I thought that this was going to challenge Passion of the Christ as the biggest R-rated film.
Yeah,
ever.
I love that they throw that in the movie.
Yes, that's a funny gag too. But it's still, I mean, it's not completely shut out of that as a possibility yet. I mean, it's going to Memorial Day weekend next week, so it's not going to probably drop huge even with the Solo coming out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that there's still an outside chance that it can do that high, but even though they nearly doubled the budget for this one, it's already made like $300 million worldwide.
Yeah. Everything is on screen. The difference between, like what the first movie looks like and what this movie looks like is night and day, I think. I mean, I think there's a huge difference between the first movie and this one in terms of style and in terms of the way it looks and the way it's put together.
Yeah, and for this type of movie, I mean, $110 million is almost chump change at this point.
Yeah.
Which is funny to even say that. But, the money is there. And $125 million opening is nothing to sneeze at. It's still in the top 30 openings of all time. People expected something much higher.
Yeah.
It's the disappointment of our own expectations more than, the film, coming up short.
Right. Right. Well, I will say this. It was packed when my folks and I saw it over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very enthusiastic crowd. I mean, they were having a blast. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think people are enjoying it.
Yeah. I mean, the friends that I went and saw with, they all really liked it. And the people that were in the theater, not that it's indicative of, the nation or anything, but the theater I was with, there was applause at the end of the movie.
Yeah. No, there was a very enthusiastic crowd. My parents liked it more than I did. and my dad, again, my dad went nuts over Zazie Beetz. He's like, who is that? And I'm
that's a lot of people are going to discover.
No. This is a star-making moment for her.
Mm-hmm.
And because obviously Atlanta doesn't have a giant audience.
Right.
And it's a sort of a specific audience that's very, very passionate about it. Of course, I'm one of them.
Yeah, me too.
And this is one of the reasons I was looking forward to the movie, was because of her. So, well, anyway, $125 million, and it'll be number two next week, you think?
But yeah, Solo will overtake the top spot.
Yeah.
It will end up with a Memorial Day record next week, Solo.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to make a lot of money. No question about it. All right, number two, Avengers Infinity War. So the top two movies star Josh Brolin.
That's
which
right.
is no surprise. $28.6 million, bringing its total up to $595 million in America. So that's still going pretty strong.
It's going very strong. And now it's going to be the watch to see whether or not it can overtake Black Panther here in the U.S. It's just a little over $100 million less than where Black Panther is right now. But it's overtaken Black Panther by nearly $500 million worldwide.
Wow.
$1.8 billion this movie is up to.
Man.
And still going. So, I mean, we could have another $2 billion film on our hands when all is said and done.
Incredible. Boy, the Marvel people are just happy.
Oh, yeah. And there's still another one of these to come.
I know. So crazy. All right, number three, Book Club, $12.5 million. So the counter-programming didn't really work.
No, not so much. I mean, it was more successful last week when there it was just Avengers to deal with Life of the Party and Breaking In, which did pretty well, and then dropped off huge this week.
Yeah.
But yeah, Book Club, I mean, that's probably about where I expected it to kind of fall in line.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, Memorial Day weekend, next weekend, you're going to see not a huge drop-off for it. So, I mean, this thing's probably going to be headed somewhere in the vicinity of like $40 million when all is said and done.
That's
not great, but whatever.
Yeah, there's definitely an audience for the movie. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, those are you want to, every once in a while, I think they should make movies for people who want to see something like Book Club.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Maybe good ones, though.
Yeah.
I've not heard good things about this movie.
Yeah, right. So, number four, Life of the Party, $7.7 million, $31 million total. That's not good.
No, it's kind of following the Snatched model from last year when Amy Schumer's film did pretty well over Mother's Day weekend, and then it just dropped huge the second week, and it's pretty much the same thing happened here.
Okay, and then number five is Breaking In, $6.4 million. That dropped off big, too.
Dropped off big, but it's a $6 million budgeted film,
right.
So, you know, it's going to probably turn a minor profit.
Yep, okay, and then number six is Show Dogs.
Yeah.
$6 million. Explain.
The movie or why it made $6 million?
Well, both.
I think that the title, I think, kind of says it all. I mean, $6 million. I mean, the global. If you look who distributed the movie, it's this company called Global Road. This used to be Open Road.
Oh, okay.
Pictures.
All right.
Okay. And the thing about Open Road / Global Road that I point out, because it's a pretty amazing streak. You really have to kind of be bad at your jobs to maintain this kind of streak. They have not had a movie open to $10 million since 2014.
Oof.
The last movie they had to open to $10 million, and I'm talking like literally like $10 million, was Nightcrawler.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So that's why they changed the name of the company?
I suppose. Maybe the people will forget, I guess. But this is the second movie under the Global Road banner. The other one was that Midnight Sun movie with Bella Thorne.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Well, I'm looking at this. I didn't even, apparently it's like talking dogs.
Yeah, of course.
Voiced by Alan Cumming, Stanley Tucci, Shaquille O'Neal, Gabriel Iglesias, Jordan Sparks, Ludacris. And then,
why are we still on the phone? Let's go see this.
And Will Arnett and Natasha Lyonne are the stars. And RuPaul's in it. Well, that's good.
Oh.
Yeah, no, talking dogs. Show Dogs. It's a shock that it made $6 million.
That's right.
Wow. All right. Number seven, Overboard, $4.7 million, $36.9 million in 3 weeks. That's not good.
It's not good, but, I mean, it's right in line with the Latin Lover numbers from last year.
This one,
the budget's probably a bit more than that.
Yeah.
But still, not terrible, but not great either.
Okay. Number eight, A Quiet Place continues to make money. $4 million. It's up to $176 million just in America.
Yeah, just amazing. That every time I see that movie in the top ten, it brings a smile to my face.
Oh, yeah. And people, there are some people who waited a few weeks to see it that I've talked to, or, at least conversed with over texts or Facebook, who really loved it.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, I know you don't like Deadpool 2, so... this will suck more for you than me. Mm-hmm. That Quiet Place, you know, has been, you know, just dominating, you know, or, you know, doing incredibly well since it's opened.
Yeah.
It's still just shy of $300 million worldwide, and Deadpool 2 reached that in 3 days.
3 days, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Number nine, Rampage, $1.5 million, up to $92.4 million. Is it going to hit $100 million?
Doesn't look that way. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of on its last legs here in the U.S., 1.5 million. Yeah, that's not going to hit 100 million here, but it's hit more than 400 million worldwide.
Wow.
So it's a huge international success. They love the Dwayne Johnson.
They do.
Overseas.
They do.
Yeah.
And that skyscraper thing is coming out in a couple of weeks or 3 weeks or
something.
Yeah,
and I think that's the international appeal is what's going to save that movie.
Because yeah.
I don't think that's going to do much more than Rampage.
No.
That's my prediction, at least.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't look very good.
Yeah.
So, and then number 10, the documentary, again. As
yeah.
we mentioned before, a documentary in the top 10 for the week, and that's RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary, $1.2 million, bringing up to $3.8 million total. That's pretty
yeah,
impressive.
Yeah, I mean, this period in May is when we have one or two, you know, the big movies, your Avengers, your Deadpools, that dominate at the top, and then all the movies that have kind of been out for a while in April are kind of just lingering at the bottom of the top 10. So you tend to get, you know, one or maybe sometimes two of these very limited releases that sneak into the top 10.
Yeah.
This is a little bit more than sneaking, though. I mean, they increased the theater count. It's up to 375 theaters, so that you can good on Magnolia for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, $3.8 million for a Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary, that's impressive.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I'm happy about it.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Very, very cool. All right. So what are you saying? What do you think Solo's going to make next week? What do you got, a prediction?
Well, I'm thinking for like the 4-day weekend, I'm thinking somewhere around 170, 175.
Oh, wow. I would have thought more. I don't know why.
4-day. No, I have a feeling that the Kylo Ren's out there are still, you know, angry about Last Jedi.
Oh, please.
And, you know, and those people. And it's getting, I mean, the movie, you know, we're Colin and I are positive on it. It's getting mostly positive reviews.
Yeah.
They're not enthusiastically positive.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I mean, this is just a fun, good, solid movie.
Yeah. You know, it's really weird. Is I remember back in 2015 when everybody was all excited about The Force Awakens and I was poo-pooing it.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't care. I've liked every single new Star Wars movie.
You're on a roll, man.
you're
on an absolute roll.
They're all good.
I will say this, and this goes against the grain a little bit. I don't think Colin agrees with me, but I like this more than Rogue One.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Rogue One for me is the lesser of all the newer Star Wars movies.
Mm. See, that's my favorite of all the.
I know.
Because everybody dies in it.
Yeah.
So, and it's been long enough that I can say that. And anybody who knows it's a setup for Star Wars knows that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Right.
Anyway, all right, so we'll see how much it makes. We got the weekend off. Have a great Memorial Day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man. Sounds
great. Take care. There you go. There's Eric Childress. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks to review all the new movies because we're off for Memorial Day next week. All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the Billboard Music Awards and feeling old.